we have three classes left, and we have two topics, Mashiach and Tchiyas HaMetim. I will spend probably a shiur and a half on each. This shiur will take us a bit more than, this sheet will take us a little bit more than one class, but we will hopefully get a lot out of Mashiach because it's a most misunderstood topic. Now, like I've said throughout with all of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, there are other people with other opinions. The Rambam's approach to Mashiach is not just his, but it is certainly not the only approach. And you will see and you will hear things about Mashiach that the Rambam says, and you'll say to yourself, that's not what I heard, or that's not what I thought about Mashiach. And I certainly get this reaction when I speak to girls who've grown up with a traditional Jewish high school education, where they have whatever they've heard about Mashiach almost certainly is not what the Rambam says, which is interesting. Having said which, the Rambam has one of the most worked through analyses of Mashiach, because he has Hilchas Mashiach. He's the one that wrote the book, the Halachas of Mashiach. The last two chapters of the Mishnah Torah deal in depth, which we'll be looking at in a few minutes. And therefore, if anybody deals with the subject fully, the Rambam is certainly that person. So we'll see what he has to say. Let's have a look first. I gave you the Ani Ma'amin first. I don't normally give you the Ani Ma'amin, because the Ani Ma'amins are not written by the Rambam, but it's a very famous one. So have a look at the Ani Ma'amin. Ani Ma'amin be'emuna shleima b'vias HaMashiach. Everyone can sing a song, yeah, whichever song you want to sing. I believe in the coming of Mashiach. Va'af al pisha yitzma mea, even though, bless you, even though he may delay. Im kol zeh, nevertheless, okay, achak eloi, I will wait for him, sheyavod, because he will come. Okay, I will wait for him to come. There's a kind of a bit of a Jewish kind of krecht in that the Ani Ma'amin. There's a Jewish kind of sigh. In the words, im kol zeh, you know, with all of it, all of the stuff that we've had to put on with, up with, so I'll nevertheless wait. And what they pick up on there, the word, the yitzmamea, is a word we'll see comes directly from the Rambam, which itself comes directly from a posik in Habakkuk. So let's have a look at the actual wording of the Rambam himself in number 2. Hayisayid hashneim asar, the 12th principle. Yemois hamashiach, are the days of Mashiach. Which I think is interesting in and of itself. It's not just that Mashiach comes. It's what happens when Mashiach's here that's important. V'hu laham min sheyavoy, to believe that Mashiach will come. V'lo yacher, and he will not delay. He will not be too late. There'll be the right time and Mashiach will come. And he quotes a pasuk from Habakkuk, im yitmama, even if Mashiach delays, chakeloi. Rachel? Wait for him. In other words, there has to be an expectation, and he's going to see what this explain what this is in a minute. It's not just enough to believe that Mashiach is coming. There has to be an active expectation. The loy yusam loy kate katsuf, but do not try and predict a date. Don't try and find an end and say Mashiach will come at this time. That's wrong. The loy yifarshu hamakiras. Don't try and explain the verses lahaytim ehem zman bo, to try and predict a certain time for the coming of Mashiach. That's not correct to say, look, I read the Psukim, if you put this together with this together with this, Mashiach will come on a certain date. HaChachamim Oimrim, the Chachamim said, the Rabbi said, okay, Tafuch Dasam Shel Mechashvei Kitzim. Let those people who try and calculate the end, Tafuch Dasam means their views will explode. It means that it's like full of hot air. It's rubbish. People tell you when Mashiach's coming, they're talking nonsense. It's you can't predict it, you can't know. It actually irritates me a little bit. You go to Shirim and they say things like, you know, Mashiach, it's got to be coming because look what's happening around us today. Mashiach has to be coming. And I think that's a bit silly. We have to be davening Mashiach can come anytime. Today, tomorrow, whatever. And there are certain days that say Mashiach can't come on Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos, whatever. So maybe Mashiach can't come tomorrow instead of Yom Tov, whatever. But this idea that Mashiach has to be coming because of what's around us, it's a bit silly, because all the way through history people have been saying that and have been wrong, and that's not really what it means, I think, to actively wait for Mashiach, is to try and kind of pretend or convince people that he's going to be here right now. Ulahamin begedulasai, and one has to believe in the greatness, understand the greatness of Mashiach, va'ahavasai, and the importance of loving the concept of Mashiach, va'hatfila alav, and davening for Mashiach. Okay, so all of these things are important. Wanting Mashiach, davening for Mashiach, Kifi mashe dubarbo ali dei kol navi mi Moshe ad Malachi. Because every navi, every prophet from Moshe to Malachi, who is the last prophet, Malachi is the last book of prophecy in the Torah, in the Tanakh rather, they all spoke about Mashiach. Umishe metal boy sofik, someone who doubts that there'll be a Mashiach. Or mazalzel dvaroi, or mocks the idea of Mashiach. Mechaziv haTorah is denying the Torah itself. That specifically, explicitly refers to Mashiach for Parshas Bilam, when it talks about it in Parshas Bilam, v'atem natsavim, and in Parshas Nitzavim. In other words, there are Parshas in the Torah, there are Psukim in the Torah that talk directly and explicitly about the coming of an age where something will happen and Mashiach will come, etc. U'michlal yisoid hazeh, ki ein melech liYisrael ela miDavid, and part of this principle is that there will never be a king of Israel other than from the tribe of Judah, from David, Umizera Shlomo b'Yichud, and specifically from Shlomo. Why does he care? Why does it matter that it comes specifically from Shlomo? So I brought you a footnote. This may be an anti-Christian dig, because the Christians, or at least there are certain Christian sources, who link their Mashiach figure to David, to King David, but not through Shlomo, through another one of King David's sons. And therefore, Rambam is saying that our tradition is that Mashiach descends from David through Shlomo. That's very important. And anyone who denies the importance and the centrality of the family of David is denying Hashem and the words of his prophets. Now, what do you get out of that? The idea that, number one, there has to be an active confidence that Mashiach will come, not predicting when Mashiach has to be coming, appreciating the importance of Mashiach and the era of Mashiach, which we'll see now, davening for Mashiach, which of course we do, in Shemana Esrei, there's a bracha, which we daven specifically for Mashiach, okay, Tzemach David, and also the idea that a Jewish king has to be from the line of Mashiach. Yes?
If it has to be from Shlomo, the son of David,
yes.
Why don't we just say from the line of Shlomo? Isn't it like...
Right, because David is called Mashiach Hashem. David is like the first anointed one in the line of King David. And Mashiach will, if you like, restore Malchus to the level of David HaMelech. Shlomo was not the perfect king. David, in many ways, was David Melech Israel, Chai V'Kayam. It's not Shlomo Melech Israel, Chai V'Kayam. And there are reasons for that as well. Shlomo had some difficult spots in his life. Oh, David also had some difficult spots in terms of things around him, but in terms of his presence as a king, I think David represents much more for us the idea of kingship than Shlomo. Now, let's now look at some of the things that Rambam specifically says about Mashiach and see where that takes us. Have a look in source number 3. The first thing to do is to disconnect Mashiach from Olam Haba. And this already is where the Rambam is going to strike out in a different direction from other people. The word Olam Haba, what does that mean, the world to come? People confuse that to mean different things. Is it the place that you go, well, not the place, the existence that you have when you die, which we talked a little bit about? Is it Mashiach? What is it? Is it the resurrection of the dead? What are those things? So have a look at number 3. How much did King David want Olam Haba? And the Rambam, when he talks about Olam Haba, is specifically talking about the soul world, the non-physical soul world. We looked at that when we looked at the 10th Ikkar, yeah, and the 11th Ikkar, the world that you go to when you die. Lulei hamanti l'rois l'tzuv Hashem be'eretz achayim, how much I wanted to see the goodness of Hashem in the land of the living, that's Olam Haba. Ukfar hadiyunu chachamim harishonim shitoves Olam Haba, ein koich ba'adam la'asiga al-bariyah. And the Nevi'im, the rabbis rather, have already told us that no one can understand what Olam Haba is perfectly, how powerful Olam Haba is. Ve'ein yodeh gadla v'yafya, no one can know how great and beautiful it is, the atma and the essence of it, ela ha'kodesh baruch hu levado. To know the next world is to know God. Because God is the next world. The next world is a bonding with God. So to know the next world is an impossibility. Because just like you can't know God in this world, you can't know the next world in this world. V'shekol ha'tov Hashem itnabim b'hem ha'nevim li'Yisrael, and therefore he says, every good thing that the Nevi'im promise throughout the Nevuahs of Yeshaya, etc., etc., einom elo l'dvarim shel ha'guf, they're only talking about physical things, they're not talking about Olam Haba. She'ninim b'hem Yisrael b'yomos ha'melech ha'mashiach, they're talking about things that we will encounter and enjoy when it comes to Mashiach. Bizman she'tachso ha'memshal al Yisrael, when government comes back to the Jewish people. So that's the first important thing he said, which is that when the Nevi'im talk about the Olam Haba, or talk about the next, what's going to be, they're not talking about Olam Haba, the spiritual soul world. No one's got a clue what that's like. They're talking about Mashiach, That we do have a clue. Aval Toldos Chai Olam Haba, second paragraph, Eila Erech B'Dimyon. The Olam Haba itself, the next world, the soul world, has no comparison. We don't have any way of valuing it, of assessing it. V'loy Dimua HaNeviim, and the Neviim didn't have any clue about it. K'dei Shelo Yivchasu Oysa B'Dimyon. They couldn't belittle it by comparing it to anything. Just like we don't compare God to anything. We don't say anything positive about God. Because whatever you say about God is going to be just an insult, it's going to be wrong. So you can't say anything about the next world either. For Husha Yeshayahu Ame Ain Loi Rasa, Yeshayah said, no eye has ever seen it. Elokim Zulatcha, apart from you. Yase Lemachakelo, but he'll do it for those who wait. Kalayma Hatobi Shaloi Rasa, Oisa Ain Novi, as that means that the goodness that no Novi ever saw, okay? Ela Asa Oisa Elokim La Adam Shemachakelo, but God will do that eventually, Olam Haba, when exists this bonding, this return to the source. Amru Chachamim, the Chachamim said, Kol Neviim Kulam Loi Nisbam Wa Elam Moshe Mashiach. All the Neviim only talks about Mashiach. Aval Olam Haba Ein Loi Rasa Elokim Zulatcha. So the first point he's made here is we don't know anything about the next world. We do know, however, stuff about Mashiach, because the Neviim are full of talking about Mashiach. So let's talk about Mashiach. Fine.
Rabbi,
yes.
When in the Neviim it starts to talk about Mashiach?
Everywhere, all over the place. It's in the Torah itself. It's in Yeshayah in great length. In Bilam, when Bilam has his prophecy about what's going to be at the end of days, he says, let me tell you what's going to be at the end of days. Look at Parashat Balak, okay, towards the end of his prophecies there, you'll start talking about that. Also in Nitzavim, it talks about the fact that at the end of days, there'll be a returning of the exiles, they'll be coming back to Eretz Israel, there'll be a re-establishment of a Tshuvim revolution. He talks about that in the Torah itself. Okay, and all over the Nevi'im. Yes. I think people do. People talk about Olam Haba. People think of Mashiach as being a very miraculous, like everyone's coming back from the dead, and it's the end of days, and it's a kind of all the dead people come back, and that, they think that way about Mashiach. Yeah, and he's saying no. He's saying that's just a mistake. There are three different things going on. One is Olam Haba, the place that people are when they die, or the existence they have when they die. One is Yemot HaMashiach, which is what happens to this physical world when Mashiach comes. And the third thing is Tchias HaMesim, which is not tied in with either of the first two necessarily. Three different things, three different times potentially, and three different processes. And we said we shouldn't confuse them, says the Rambam. He's going to say right now that Mashiach is a completely physical, non-miraculous world. And anything you've heard about miracles is nothing to do with Mashiach. Yeah.
I think probably
why
people confuse it is because Christians play the Mashiach with God, so they confuse the Mashiach and Messianic era, and maybe that's why.
Yeah, it could be. You're right. It could be that some of our Messianic concepts have been blurred a little bit by Christian Messianic concepts. But of course, Christianity had to reinvent the Messianic concepts a number of times because they based it on the Old Testament, and yet they have to invent the Second Coming because Jesus didn't satisfy the requirements of Mashiach as laid down in the Old Testament, etc. And therefore they've had to kind of do a bit of dodging and weaving to try and redefine Mashiach. The Rambam, of course, is not in a vacuum either. He's going to talk about Jesus in the uncensored Rambam, which I'm going to bring you. You get it in this class, the uncensored version. On the shelf you get the censored version. In my sheets you get the uncensored version. He's going to talk about Jesus and Christianity and how that fits into the concept of Mashiach as well. But he wants first of you to be very clear. I need to go on for a second. Look at number four. Hamelech HaMashiach. Let's talk about what we do know about Mashiach, says the Rambam. Hamelech HaMashiach Atid La'amod. There will be a King Mashiach, King Messiah, at a certain point in the future. Ula'achsim Malchus Beis David V'yoshna. He'll return the kingship, the family of the king, the royal family of King David, to its original glory. Hamemshala harishon liyoshna, hamemshala harishon, to its original government. So the first thing the Rambam says about Mashiach, it's a political process. There's a new kind of government. There's a new kind of Jewish sovereignty, memshala. It's not just a religious movement. Uvone mikdash, he'll build a temple. And he'll gather in all of the exiles who are scattered all over the world, all the Jews who are scattered. That's three things: the government, Jewish sovereignty, the Beis HaMikdash, and the ingathering of the exiles. And all of the laws
that used to apply, that are on the statute book, if you like, in principle, that no longer apply because we don't have the, you know, the full Eretz Yisrael experience. We don't have a temple, we don't have Kohanim, etc. All of those laws, he says, will return, k'shehayu b'kodem, just like they were originally. Makriven korbonos, will bring sacrifices, v'ois in shmiti, will keep shmiti year properly in its full sense, v'yoimus, in the jubilee year every 50 years, k'chol mitzvah and amur b'torah, just like the Torah said we should. So it's very important for the Rambam that Mashiach will not be a change in halachic paradigm, but will be a return to the original halachic paradigm. This is very critical.
Return to what?
The original halachic paradigm. Meaning, people ask, why do we bring korbanos? So there's all sorts of reasons given. The Rambam, very famously in Moreh Nevuchim, says, why did God introduce the concept of korbanos? To wean people off pagan concepts of sacrifice, which involve human sacrifice, or pagan understandings of animal sacrifice, where we're trying to persuade the gods to be nice to us. Says that's pagan, that's completely antithetical to Judaism. But you couldn't just switch people off, you know, overnight. So we have to have a system of, a total system of sacrifices that will take us from place A through to place B. Now, that was very controversial when the Rambam said that, and other people didn't agree with him. But you might then ask, well, okay, so when Mashiach comes, why will I need sacrifices? Because if the whole point was to wean me off paganism, so we've done that already, I don't need to go back, it's going backwards. So the Rambam clearly says not like that. The Rambam clearly says, no, the whole point of Mashiach is the Torah has to come back in its absolute pristine original state. There can be no change to the Torah when Mashiach comes. That's very fundamental to the Rambam. So then you have to ask, well, according to you, the Rambam, so why do I need sacrifices? Okay, so then you can think about that. Maybe the Rambam will turn to you and say, ha ha, you think you're so much less pagan than people were 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago? Oh, the veneer of modern monotheism is pretty, maybe pretty thin. Yeah, I don't know. You can go and think about why the Rambam hashkafically still needs korbanos, but he clearly does. On the other hand, the Ramban, Nachmanides, who disagrees so strongly with the Rambam, and says, chas v'shalom, God forbid, korbanos were not some kind of temporary kind of dispensation. Korbanos are an intrinsic part of God's will for the world. God wanted korbanos. They weren't a result of the golden calf or whatever. The Ramban will argue that when Mashiach comes, we won't have korbanos anymore. Why? Because the Ramban is part of an outlook which understands Mashiach to be miraculous. And the Torah can change. And there'll be a new Torah when Mashiach comes. And therefore there may not be korbanos anymore. It's very ironic. People often assume it to be the other way around. But the Rambam is absolutely insistent that halacha does not change when Mashiach comes. One iota. We get it back. I mean, it changes from what we have today. But that's because from today we just don't have the ability to keep halacha properly. But eventually we will. So we get korbanos. We get the Beis Hamikdash. We get the whole work. Second paragraph, in number 4. V'kol mi she'enu ma'amin boy, if you don't believe in Mashiach, or mi she'enu mechakel v'yaso, you don't wait actively for Mashiach, loy v'shar nevim bilvad hukofi, you're not just denying the prophets in the Bible. Ela b'toros Moshe Rabbeinu, you are denying the Torah itself. And then he brings psukim. If you wanted to know, Rivka, where is Mashiach in the Torah? So he brings it here. God will bring back your exiles, and have mercy on you, etc., etc. And he brings you, and I skipped a few of them, but you can look there in the original where he brings all the different sukkim in the Torah that deal with Mashiach. Fine. Now, yes.
Where do you get your sense of the Rambam from? Well,
I'll get to that when we get there. So far, I haven't read you anything that's been censored. The uncensored bit comes in about 10 minutes. I'll tell you when we get there. Now, number 5. The Rambam then goes on to talk about Mashiach as follows. See, again, this is the last two chapters in the Mishnah Torah in his halachic work deals with the halachas of Mashiach. Number 5. Al ya'ale al datach. Don't think for 1 minute, says the Rambam, shehamelech ha-Mashiach tarich la'asos oisis ha-mosin. The King Messiah, the Mashiach, needs to do any miracles or any wonders or anything supernatural. He says, don't think that. Or invent anything new in the world. Or bring the dead back to life. No? Now, the Rambam got into trouble for saying this because people jumped on him and said, you don't believe in Tchiyas HaMeisim? You don't believe that the dead will come back to life? And he had to write a defense of his position, which we'll deal with in the next year, which he said, no, of course, Chas V'Shalom, of course I believe the dead will come back to life. It's just nothing to do with Mashiach. which is interesting. So the Mashiach won't have to bring the dead back to life, because that's pretty miraculous. Or is it? We'll see next week whether maybe not as miraculous as we think. Only idiots say that. Tipesh is a fool. Only foolish people think that Mashiach will be doing miracles. Ain't a davar kein. Certainly not true. Shehari Rabbi Akiva Chacham Gadol Mechacham in Mishnah Haya. He brings a proof for Rabbi Akiva. He was one of the greatest rabbis of the Mishnah, one of our greatest all-time heroes, Rabbi Akiva. And he was the armor bearer. He was the second right hand man to Ben Koziba, who was Bar Kochba. Bar Kochba was a rebel against the Romans around 70 years after the destruction of the temple, and people thought that Bar Kochba was the Mashiach. That he was the Mashiach. He was wrong. He wasn't Mashiach. It's not just Rabbi Akiva, but everybody else thought he was also the Mashiach. So your rabbis can be wrong sometimes. In case anyone told you they couldn't be. Okay. Could be wrong. Until eventually Bar Kochba was killed for his sins. He went off the rails. He showed he wasn't Mashiach. He was killed in battle. Kivan Shenarag, as soon as he died, he was killed. No Deshein Mashiach. It was clear that he wasn't Mashiach, because he was dead, and he'd been killed. The Loi Shalim Memenu Chachamim, Loi Ois V'Loi Mofis, and the proof he's bringing is no one ever asked him to do a miracle. No one after ever asked him, turn water to wine, and walk on the water, and do these kind of things. Nah, that's child's play. Miracles. But the Rambam says we're very suspicious of miracles. Because what do miracles prove exactly? Miracles prove that you're doing something I don't understand. What does that say about you? That you're authentic? That you're from God? Maybe you're just pulling the wool over my eyes. Maybe you've got some clever, someone's pulling the strings. Maybe you can, I don't know. I'm sure, like 300 years ago, if I'd have taken out my eye touch and shown it to someone, they'd have also said I was doing miracles. I know the truth. I just bought it from whatever. And it works. I probably wouldn't have got a signal there. But no Wi-Fi, 17th century. But the point here is, I don't know anything about miracles. I don't respect miracles. That's an important point that, again, the Christians often can't. They're coming from a different direction. To them, miracles are very important. So miracles are very unexciting. Very unexciting. And the miracles that we see in our own Chumash are not proving anything, says the Rambam. They don't prove that Chumash is true. They don't prove that God is real. They don't prove that the proof that we have, that we connect with God, is our Sinai. The miracles were just necessary. The people were hungry, they had to get manna, so they had the miracle. It's very practical. It's a whole different understanding of miracles. So he says no one ever asked him for a miracle. By the way, this line of the Rambam, as soon as he was killed, it was clear that he couldn't be the Mashiach. This is part of the whole discussion today about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Mm-hmm. Is it possible the Lubavitcher Rebbe is Mashiach, or was Mashiach, will be Mashiach? So people point to this line in the Rambam and say, oh, see Bar Kochba, as soon as he was dead, he was out of the running. So the Rebbe is dead, he's out of the running. To which people who will support the Rebbe's candidacy of Mashiach will say, no. It said Bar Kochba was killed for his sins. That's why he wasn't the Mashiach. It doesn't say that he died. And the Rebbe was never killed for his sins, the Rebbe was a tzaddik. And therefore, I'm not going to take any sides in that debate, because it's a longer discussion, but I want you to understand where people are coming from a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more practically about the whole Chabad phenomenon today and how that works in practice. But for now, let's just deal with this Rambam. Ve'ikar dvarim, second paragraph, kachahim. The main point is this. She'atara zois ein chukei ha-mishpatah mishtanim. The Torah and its laws will never change. Le'olam forever, ever. Or le'olam ve'olamim, forever and ever and ever and ever. You can't answer the Torah, but loy gorim imahem, and you can't take away from the Torah. Kol amosif or gorea, anyone who adds or takes away, or shigila panim b'Torah, or tries to invent new ideas in halacha, v'hoytzi advarim shel mitzvos mipshutam, and tries and perverts and diverts the mitzvos from their obvious meaning. Harizeb v'adai rosh of apikoros. Such a person for sure is wicked and an apikoros. In other words, the biggest and most immediate thing to disqualify you as Mashiach is when you turn around and say to people you don't have to keep halacha anymore. And Shabbat, of course, was 500 years after the Rambam. But this is classically one of the reasons why, in the Rambam's model of Mashiach, Shabbat Tzvi was completely out of the running. The minute he turned around and said, for those who don't know who Shabbat Tzvi was, Shabbat Tzvi was a very, very important, very tragic episode in the Jewish people's history. In the 1650s and 60s, Shabbatai Tzvi, originally in Turkey and then in various other places, announced that he was the Mashiach. He had an enormous following.
It wasn't just a bunch of cranks. It was a massive number of mainstream people thought that this was it. People were taking their homes down because they say, we don't need them anymore, we're going to live in Israel. The Dutch East India Company were unable to charter ships because the Jews had chartered them to go back to Israel, because they were so convinced that it was going to be the real thing. They'd just come out of the Chelmsky massacres of 1648, Tachpatad. They'd just undergone a Holocaust of immense proportions. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were killed in the most horrific circumstances. The Jews were convinced there was going to be a Mashiach. There has to be a Mashiach. So they put all their hopes on Shabbatai Tzvi. And he went crazy. He went, I mean, he may have been bipolar on different levels anyway, but he had sort of manic depressive episodes. And he announced, he started breaking halacha. He announced they were going to eat on Tisha B'Av. Okay, so you think you're the Mashiach, so you cancel Tisha B'Av. I can kind of see that. But then he starts announcing we can eat meat and milk together. That was a big deal. We cancelled meat and milk. And we can start eating trade food now. Trade food is now kosher because we are now revealing even higher levels of Kedusha, that there's even Kedusha in the Averus. And then they got into wife swapping in a big way. And by the way, in case you think this is, I'm making this up, we have records from the 18th century, in the 100 years after Shabbatai Tzvi, where there were secret Sabbatean societies, okay, where people were secretly supporting Shabbatai Tzvi, and there still are people.
And after he died?
After he died.
Still
today, I met a Sabbatean, okay.
Why?
Well, even though at the end of his life, The Sultan of Turkey basically said, once he started becoming a political threat, at the beginning he was just like a sideshow. But once he said, I'm marching on Jerusalem and taking back Jerusalem, so the Sultan then said, no, this has gone far enough. And he said, basically, you convert to Islam or we kill you. And he converted to Islam like that, okay, with his wife. His wife was a prostitute called Sarah, who decided she'd heard a voice telling her from her father from beyond the grave, telling her to go and find Mashiach and marry her. It was an interesting crowd, yeah? Even after he converted to Islam and then eventually died, there were people who were so committed and had invested so much in Shabbatai Tzvi, they couldn't give it up. And throughout the 18th century, there was a process of trying to weed out the Sabbateans in society. And I was saying before, they uncovered whole rings of wife swapping going on in Poland, in the shtetls. You think of the shtetls in Poland? You don't think of that. Okay? And these people were doing this, as it were, the shame mitzvah. Because they felt this was the way to elevate the... It's wild. Wild stuff. Anyway, says the Rambam, the minute you start getting into that, as far as I'm concerned, there's no concept of Mashiach. Of course, if you're Kabbalistic, the Kabbalistic understandings of Mashiach understand that there may be a new Torah. There are sources for the idea of a new Torah, a change in Torah, and then you can start saying, yeah, this is it, this is the change in Torah, we're going to do this, now we're going to do that, etc. The Rambam wants to have nothing of that, and therefore the Shabbatai Tzvi would have not got past first base with the Rambam. It wouldn't have even had any interest. Now, six. This is where it gets even more, I think, interesting. Al yale al alei, don't think in your mind for a minute, shebi yomos ha-mashiach yibatel davar mi minhagu shel olam. Not just halacha, but nothing will change in the minhag of the world. The way the world works won't change when Mashiach comes. Nature, the natural world, will not change. Okay? Or yihyeh sham chidush b'maaseh breishis. There'll be no new, miraculous, new ways of the physical world working. El olam k'minhago hayles. The world will carry on in its own sweet way.
So we're going to be connected to God.
We're going to be much more. We'll see what's going to change. It's human beings. Human beings are going to change. They're going to be much more connected to God, and that's what's going to make the difference. But people are still going to get sick. People are still going to die. People are still going to have to, build buildings and do stuff that they need to do and get food and water. That's not going to change. There's not going to be bread growing on trees. That's not going to happen. The world will be what it is. V'zeshenama v'yishaya, when it says in Yeshaya, v'gar ze'ev im keves, that the wolf will lie down with the lamb, which sounds pretty miraculous. V'namer im gidi yirbats, and the leopard will crouch down with the kid. Moshe v'chid.
That is not literal, says the Rambam. That is a parable. What does it refer to? Inyan adavar, what does it mean? Sheyu Yisrael yoshvim levetach in yorishei olam. That the Jewish people who are the lamb, the vulnerable and delicate lamb, will now live in peace with the wicked people who are, at the moment, the wicked people of the world. Hamashulim bezei v'namer, who are like predators. They're like wolves. They want to kill us. They want to fire missiles at us. They're sitting there with their fingers poised over the buttons, waiting to fire. Those people now will have a blinding epiphany, and they will change their view, and we'll be able to live with these people in peace, in harmony. That's not a miracle. I mean, it feels like a miracle from a human perspective, but it's not a miracle in physical terms. He says, Shinema, Ze'ev Aravois Yishadadeim, it compares the people of the world who are plunderers, etc. It compares them to wolves, Namesh Oked Alariham, etc., etc. Yechazru Kulam Ledata Emes, this is an interesting line in the Rambam. All of them will return to the true faith, the true religion. What does this mean, the true religion? It's not clear. It's not clear whether the Rambam is saying that everyone who will become... Don't worry, it's just thundering, it's fine. It's normal weather conditions. It's strange at this time of year for it to rain, but it's not unheard of, and it happens. Okay, Vaita, listen, go. Don't be put off by a flash of lightning. Okay, say one second. I'll come to your point in a minute. If you have to go, I don't mind. It's fine. The Chazru Kulam Ledata Emet. Everybody will return to the true faith. It's not clear whether the Rambam's saying everyone has to convert to Judaism, or whether they'll become monotheists. It seems much more likely in the Rambam that he's meaning that they'll be true God-fearing people. They will be connected to God, to a true monotheistic faith. As Noahide. The lo yigzolu, and they won't steal, which are Noahide laws, yeah? The lo yashchisu, they won't destroy. They will eat things which belong to them in a way which is allowed. They won't steal from other people and take advantage of other people. That's why it says that the lion, like the cow, will eat straw. It doesn't mean that the lions will be eating straw. It means that all the people in the world who currently run mafia rings and white slave trade and black slave trade and who knows, they'll stop doing that and they'll eat and they'll be nice, God-fearing, law-abiding people. That's what it means. The kenkol yotzei be'elu hadvarim hakesuvim be'inyan Mashiach, and everything else it says about Mashiach, Mashalim heim, they're all parables. And here's an important line. And in when Mashiach comes, then we'll know what the Moshe referred to. And in other words, you can't second guess exactly what's going to be now. When Mashiach comes, we'll look around and we'll say, so this meant this, and this meant that, etc., etc. And then he says, in the second, the last line of that number 6, he's not making this up, he's quoting from the Gemara. There are different opinions in the Gemara about Mashiach. The fundamental division between the Rambam and the Kabbalists on Mashiach is based on two different opinions in the Gemara on Mashiach. There's Amru Chachamim, he's passing like one particular opinion. Ein bein olam azeli most Mashiach el a shibud malchus bilvad. The difference between now and Mashiach is simply and only political. Shibud malchus, that the non-Jews currently want to act badly, and the Jews for that matter, everyone will change. And then he says in number 7, and I just want to tie these together, and in that time, there'll be no hunger. There'll be no war. There'll be no jealousy. There'll be no oppression. Goodness will be widespread through the world. And all the beautiful things of the world will be present like the dust on the ground. Now, what's the Rambam saying? The Rambam saying there'll be no miracles and yet there'll be no hunger. The Rambam is clearly making an important social statement, which is the only reason that there are hungry people today is because we don't share the food with them. Not because we don't have enough food. The only reason that there are people starving and dying is because we have war and kill them. The only reason people die from cancer is that we don't spend the money trying to cure cancer, we spend the money trying to make weapons. And if you spend all that money trying to cure cancer, then you don't need to change, you don't need to bring miracles for people not to die like they do right now. Who knows what breakthroughs we could make in aging, in longevity, if we spent all of our money on medical research? Maybe we would all live till 150 or 350. Is that impossible? You speak to doctors today, they'll say it's not impossible.
If they could crack this and crack that and crack that, then they could do that. So the Rambam actually, and it's interesting you say, Rivka, you know, I don't like the sound of this, it sounds disappointing, I have this idea of this like world of miracles and all that kind of stuff. I once had a guy in my ship, a New York guy, and he said, you know, I don't like this, he said. He says, Mashiach sounds just like my life right now. That's because
he lived... He lives in New York. He has expensive healthcare. You know, he lives outside. I said, yeah, fine. He said, that's just about you, isn't it? What about all those people that live on less than $1 a day in Africa? What all about these people who get, you know, macheted every couple of years by the tribe down the road?
Right. So of course you think you're living in Mashiach. One of the major problems is people think they're living in Mashiach. It's, you know, there's a lot of people who think they're living in the times of Mashiach today.
Not
they kind of live in this little bubble and pretend that we're living in Mashiach. Part of the issue, I should say, if I make a bit of social comment, part of the issue that dealing with the whole structure of society in Israel is there's a lot of different groups of people that think that they're living in the times of Mashiach, or almost. There are a group of people who believe that they're living, and I'm not coming to say one way or the other, but there's a group of people in this country who believe that they're living in a political process which is leading towards Mashiach and the conquest of the land, etc., etc. There's another group of people that think that they're living in a time of Mashiach and they can sit and learn Torah all day and there's money coming down from the sky. These are all messianic concepts, I'm being quite serious. These are all groups of people who, for one reason or another, have decided that we're now living in a new world. Utopian visions, in different ways. Okay? The Rambam is saying, I think, something absolutely beautiful. The United Nations is a messianic concept for the Rambam. Does it work? No, okay. It's flawed and it's biased and yada, yada, yada. But the whole idea that groups of people will sit down instead of killing each other will at least make some pretense at talking to each other would have been unbelievable at the time of the Rambam. Even 300 years ago would have been unbelievable. And it's not, by the way, a coincidence that when they built the United Nations building in New York, they engraved on the front of it a pasuk about Mashiach from Yeshaya. The nation will not wage war against nation, so they'll turn their swords into plowshares and all that kind of stuff. They were very conscious of the fact that what they're doing was deeply messianic. Even if it doesn't quite work. But they're paskening like the Rambam, basically. The United Nations are paskening like the Rambam. Yeah.
Why sometimes for the audience it's easier for them to see like these messianic things than for us?
I don't know if it is easier. A lot of people are desperate for Mashiach. I don't know. I'm not sure you're right. There have been many messianic movements in many different religions, in many different societies, and I think we've had our share as well. Lots of people have a utopian dream. One of the effects, by the way, is Shabtai Tzvi. The mass depression that set in when people finally internalized the reality that this was not the right call, that mass depression led to a whole change of outlook in the Jewish world in the 18th century. And it led us to look for other utopian messianic options other than this one. And that's why Jews were at the forefront of other social revolutionary messianic movements. Whether it was the French Revolution, whether it was communism, whether it was Zionism, to some degree the Jews looked for other options than Mashiach. Even the yeshiva world, the turning inwards into Torah and learning Torah as a response to fix the world's problems, or Hasidut, or the Muslim movement, or the conservative, or reform. There are people who take the historical view that all of these are a response in some ways to Shabtai Tzvi and the disaster that set in, which I think is an interesting point. So one of the hand up? Yeah.
So the fact that Rabbi Akiva,
Vakokba, yeah.
No,
that name.
Yeah. And was wrong about it.
Yeah.
That all, like, discredit him or the devalue him?
No, because that was political. It wasn't Torah. In other words, it's not like he misrepresented the halachic process or did something which was prohibited or not. God forbid. In any way, he made a political statement and he backed the wrong horse. If anything, this shows you that when rabbis talk about Torah, they're reliable. When rabbis talk about politics, who knows what's going to be? But that's not to say that Rabbi Kiva was wrong to back him. Correct. And by the way, maybe he was right. Maybe Bar Kokhba was a credible candidate for Mashiach. there can be a credible candidate for Mashiach, and it's just for whatever reason the generation doesn't deserve it, it all went wrong, whatever. Nobody blames Rabbi Akiva for backing the wrong horse. He was together with a lot of other people. And when Bar Kokhba died, everyone said, okay, that never happened. The point of blame is when you can't let go. It's when your Mashiach dies and then you have to reinvent a new theology to justify the fact that he's not really dead, or that he's coming back, or this kind of stuff. That's when it gets, and we see in early Christianity the same thing. The early Christians were a group who put all their money on this guy. He died, but they wouldn't let go, and the whole thing spiraled. Now, let's go on. I'd like to skip just a couple of sources. Let's go over to page 3, because there's lots more we can see. Before we go to page 3, maybe I'll just mention that for the Rambam, it's very important that things won't change in the terms of when Mashiach comes physically and halachically. Also philosophically, because the Rambam's proof for the existence and the unity of God is based on philosophical norms and realities. If the whole world changed, then like what happens to Rambam's proof for God? What happens to philosophy and rationalism? The Rambam's a rationalist. You can't be a rationalist in a world where rationalism has now been torn up and turned irrational. In other words, more is at stake for the Rambam for a world on its head than just the concept of like fruit, you know, bread growing on trees. The entire underpinning of Judaism, you know, the epistemology of Judaism, how we know anything, is at risk if you turn the world on its head. Yes.
Would he be willing to adjust his view on the structure of the universe and that's totally different than the reality that he knew, like the whole.
Second, the structure of the universe is a scientific issue. It's not a Torah issue.
But it's kind of philosophical. This whole idea about.
Right. Whether they are physical things or not physical things, that's a good point. To what extent would the Rambam be willing to readapt his philosophical basis in a world where Aristotelian philosophy has been left way behind that we're now dealing with? That's a good question. You're saying that anyway the whole world's moved past the Rambam. Where did that leave the Rambam in this? Okay, that's a good question, which is a broader question than I really have time for right now. You're asking really fundamentally, where is the room now for the Rambam's philosophy in a world where that philosophy has been rejected by the philosophical world itself? And do we just change our philosophical underpinnings every time, we become modern, then postmodern, then post-postmodern, etc., etc.? It's a good question. I'm not getting into it now. I don't have a good answer for you right now. It has to be thought through and talked about. Now, page 3. We have 10 minutes, which is perfect. Well, let's talk a little bit about the process of Mashiach. Says the Rambam, Im Yamod, number 11, Im Yamod Melech Mibeis David, if you get a king coming from the Davidic house, and by the way, that's not so hard. I know lots of Jewish people who can trace their lineage directly back to King David. Family trees on the fridge and everything. It's not ridiculous. It's really not ridiculous. Lots of people, you don't have to go the whole way. You only have to get as far as like the Maharal of Prague and like he did the rest, or the Rashi and he did the rest. And I know one of our friends in London has a family tree on the bridge with a lineage trace rag to David HaMelech. So that's not crazy. That's doable. So if someone comes from the house of David, that means, by the way, if you're a Kohen, chances are you've lost your candidacy to Mashiach, because the Kohanim, at least on the male side, are descended from Levi, not from Yehuda. But anyway, of course, you might not be a real Kohen. Okay, that's a different question. Vim Yamod Melech Bebeis David, Hoygibet Torah, who is God-fearing and observant. If you're not religiously observant, then you can't be a candidate for Mashiach. Va'oisek b'mitzvahs, you keep mitzvahs, that cuts out Shabtai Svi for sure. K'David Aviv, in the way that David kept mitzvahs, and that may be a little bit of a kind of a dig at Shlomo. I don't know if it's a dig at Shlomo, but it's whatever. Not necessarily. K'fi Torah shebichtav verba shebalteh, and you keep the written law and the oral law. Okay, there has to be a loyalty to halacha. V'yachav kol Yisrael lelech ba, and the Mashiach persuades. My word persuades is perhaps a modern take on the word yachoit, which means coerces, whatever. He brings the world to a place where they also keep Torah. Lachazek bidka, okay. V'yilachem milchamot Hashem, and he fights the wars of God. He leads a national resurgence, a tshuva revolution, and goes like that. Says the Rambam, harizeh b'cheskat shehu Mashiach. He's probably Mashiach. In other words, it's like you have to check the boxes. A guy comes along and he's super frum and very charismatic
and gathers the Jewish people together and leads the Tshuva revolution and inspires the world, yet it looks like he may be Mashiach. He has a chazakah. He's Mashiach. The imas of Eitzlech, and then if he succeeds, v'nitzach kol ha'umah shesvivav, and he defeats all the enemies of the Jews around us, ubana mikdash, and he builds the base of mikdash v'makana in the right place. It's not good enough to build it in Uganda, okay? The kibetz nidcha Yisrael, and then he gathers the exiles. Harizem Mashiach levadai. So stage one is you have to check these five boxes, and then we say, okay, you're a candidate. And then you have to do these, check these five boxes, and then we say, oh, you're the real McCoy. V'im lo yitzliach ad kai, if he doesn't succeed, or nerag, or he gets killed, b'yadua she'ein azev she'yivtzichu alav, you know that's not the real Mashiach. He was a good try, but it's not the real Mashiach. He's like any other great king that came along, great leader from the Jewish people that was there and then died. God sent him to try us, to test us, to see if we would get carried away in messianic fervor and lose the plot, or whether we'd stick with it. Etc. Etc. Now, here's the uncensored bit. The Af Yeshu Hanotzri. Jesus of Nazareth, him too. Shidima Shiyah Mashiach, that made out that he was a Mashiach. The Nerag Bebeistin, he was killed by the Beistin. That's interesting. He doesn't say he was killed by the Romans. He said he was killed by the Beistin. Okay. That might mean that the Beistin handed him over to the Romans, because the Beistin at the time of Jesus didn't have the ability to carry out necessarily public executions, because we were under the control of the Romans. But that's another story. Kfar mitnabi bo Daniel. Jesus was already part of the prophecy of Daniel, he says. Shenemah, v'nei puritzei amcha, yina'asu laha'amid chazayim v'nikashtu, there'll be people who break through the barriers and they will come to test you and try you, etc. V'kiyesh mirshal gadol mizeh, is there any greater stumbling block than Christianity? Shekol ha'nevi'im dibru sh'amashiach goyel Yisrael ha'mashiach. All the Nevi'im said that the Mashiach would redeem the Jewish people. But save the Jewish people. Would cause the Jewish people to do more terror, bring their exiles in. And this man, Jesus, he says, Gorom la'abed Yisrael b'cherev. He caused us to be destroyed. And the Jewish people were reduced to slavery after him. They tried to change the Torah. The Christians are basically corrupting the world in that way. To worship foreign gods. The Rambam understands that Christianity is pagan, is not monotheistic. It's polytheistic. And he says that Christianity is not a legitimate religion for non-Jews. Later on, he says that Christianity had a purpose. They got people, you know, talking about Mashiach. They moved them closer to monotheism. You know, if I used to have 25 gods and now I've got 3, so okay, I'm going in the right direction. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Like, it's an improvement. You should know that not everyone agrees with the Rambam. There are other people that say that Mashiach, that Christianity is monotheistic, and that it is legitimate for non-Jews to be Christians in terms of monotheism. I'm not getting into that debate now. The reason this was censored from the Rambam is obviously the church wouldn't let them write this. The church wouldn't let them openly criticize Christian teachings. And the reason that our printed versions are the censored versions is that the church was in charge of the printing presses and wouldn't let us print the uncensored ones. Now the Rambam has had these parts restored to it, and you can now go out to the shops and buy an uncensored Rambam. Printed with all the original stuff in. And therefore, the Rambam's saying, if you want to know why did the Jews not believe in Jesus, he didn't do any of the things Mashiach is meant to do. Mashiach is meant to save the Jewish people, bring them closer to God, rebuild the temple, bring in the gatherings of the exiles. And all of the opposite stuff happened. In fact, Christianity itself gave up, really, to a large degree, convincing the Jews, because it was just a no-brainer. And it went out to the non-Jews. The shift in Christian teaching from, like, the Gospels of Matthew, for example, which are aimed much more towards the Jews, to the Gospels of Luke and also then Paul later on, who aimed it out towards the Romans. So that was a shift in strategy, because it wasn't working with the Jews. The Jews are very hard to convince of anything. Skeptical. They're a bit cynical. They're difficult to pull along with you. They resist change. That's how it works. And therefore, you see, the Rambam says there is this two-stage process with the Mashiach. First of all, you have a chazaka of Mashiach, and then you're the real thing. So, what's the time? I've got a couple of minutes. Let me just do one more source,
and then we'll pick up with the next with source 13 next time. The last source, I'm sorry, there's quite a lot of material in terms of the Makoros today, but it's important to get them clear. The Rambam then says, and I think this is the last source, certainly for now, from the Halachas of Mashiach. I think it's the last one on the sheet from this, but let's look at source 13. Part of the process, it seems from the words of the Nevi'im, is that at the beginning of Mashiach there will be a big war, which we call the War of Gog and Magog. It's not clear what this is exactly. It's 12, I beg your pardon. And before this big war, Yamud Navi li Yisrael, there will be a prophet which will come back to the Jewish people, le Yashay Yisrael ahachin libam, to prepare them. Seems that's the process. Shenema, hini anochi sholech lachem et Eliyah Hanavi. I will send you Eliyah Hanavi. Now, you're going to tell me that you know who Eliyah is, right? Mm-hmm. Who is he?
Eliyahu.
Well, the Rambam is not so sure as you. Ve'enu ba lo letami hatahor. This person, this prophet, will not come to be metame, people who are tahor, in other words, people who are... think they're Jewish, they won't turn into not Jewish. And people who think that they're this yichus or that have this lineage, he won't come to change any of that. Eliyahu will come to bring peace to the world, or not Eliyahu, this prophet will come to bring peace to the world. Part of this process is moving towards Mashiach. Okay? And the last, then the last two paragraphs is, there are rabbis that say that Eliyahu will come. We know there'll be a prophet. Some people associate this with Eliyahu, but obviously some people don't. The Kol Elu Advarim, and this is what I want to finish with today, and all of these things are kiyot bem, lo yeda adam heichiyu. We just don't know exactly how they're going to be actually until they actually happen. There's no point writing a book, this is going to happen when Mashiach comes. We don't know exactly. Shidvarim stumim heim etel anavim, because this was not clear to the Nevi'im. In other words, the prophets had certain traditions, certain things were clearer than others, and this was not clear. Even the rabbis had no clear Masorah on this. It's interesting. When it came to Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Kashrus, they knew exactly what they were doing. When it comes to Mashiach, it's occluded, it's not clear. They were kind of working out from the verses like we are. They didn't have a clear Masorah tradition. Therefore, there's a lot of disagreement on this. And therefore, he says, don't make Mashiach, the details of Mashiach, central to your religion. These are not the essence of Judaism. Because people can get too obsessed with the details of Mashiach. This is bad for you. Back for you, he says. And look at the last paragraph. Don't get too into the agadahs, into the philosophical debate about exactly what Mashiach is going to be. But lo yarech v'divrei midrashos. Don't get too into the midrashim. Ha'amurim be'inyanim eluk yotzebehem. But lo yisinem ikah. Don't make them the center of your life. In other words, the Rambam is saying, don't be a messianist. Mashiach is great. Messianism. Meshichyut, okay, that's bad. She'ein mevi loy de'ahava, this won't bring you closer to love God. V'loli de'yirai, but won't bring you closer to keep halacha. V'chein loy chashev kitzim, don't try and work out when Mashiach is going to come. Aram chacham, the rabbi said, tapuach da'atan shel v'chashev kitzim, people who try and work out when the end is, it's just hot air, they're just going to implode. Eli yechake, you should wait for Mashiach, v'yamin v'chlar adava, and believe in the general principle, k'moshe be'aram. And I think this is a very important point to end with today, which is that the Rambam is saying that don't get Mashiach out of proportion. Don't become a Messianic Jew and go around seeing Mashiach, 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 and make that the center of your Judaism, because it won't get you closer to God. It won't help you keep halacha. We don't do mitzvahs because they bring Mashiach. We do mitzvahs because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us in the Torah to do mitzvahs. So there's a danger in making Mashiach the center of your religious focus, and he says that's very bad, and specifically focusing on the details of Mashiach, he says not good. You should pray for Mashiach, wait for Mashiach, want Mashiach, for all the reasons that we say, which at the end of the day, the Rambam is going to tell us, not now, but next time, that we can actively change the world to actually bring Mashiach closer by making the world that can receive Mashiach.
changing ourselves and, you know, strengthening peace in the world and all that kind of stuff, which we'll get to when we get to it. But for now, hopefully that's given us a good grounding in Mashiach. And next time we'll, Be'ezrat Hashem, finish the sheet next week and we will go on. All right? Leave it there.
Have a lovely day and have a lovely Shavuos. Yeah.